Hey there, let's talk today about ultimate life, about DNA, and about creating greatness. We have such a fascination with those that are at the top of their game, those that are in the public eye, that are known. I saw this article the other day about some particular music performer, not my style, not my genre, but how many, you know, concerts and how many sold out concerts and all that stuff. And so we look at those kind of people and we say, wow, oh, I could never do that. So it's one reaction. And as a coach, it's interesting because I hear people talking about this all the time. One reaction is some people say, I could never do that. I don't want to. I don't want to be in the public eye like that. I don't want to be there. And then there's other people that say that, but secretly wish they were. Ooh. But they say it because they're afraid to say, I would love to do that, because they think they can't. And there are others who just believe, I can't do that. I could never be. I'm not that good. I'm not that excellent at anything to be world class. So today I want to talk about greatness and you. I want you to think about your opportunity for greatness, because here's what I know. Let's just have a fairy tale for a minute. Let's pretend there's a wizard, Merlin the wizard, right? And has all this magic power. And you are the apprentice. You are there under the care of, not just the apprentice, but under the care of Merlin the wizard, or the other wizard that eventually was Merlin's undoing, if you follow King Arthur lore, a woman that was eventually his undoing. But if you are under the care of one of these magical beings, then you think, well, you know, you could be that powerful, that great, that looked up to. Well, we don't live in the Middle Ages, and I don't know if Merlin was a real person or not. There's people that run around and think that he was and have evidence to that. But we're not going to talk about fantasy and science fiction here, or fantasy and history and all that stuff. I want to talk about you here now in 2023. Let's finish this story about magic. Where did you come from? Now, your body, this physical box, this skin bag that we live in, well, that came from your parents, your dad, your mom. Maybe you know who they both are. Maybe you don't. But you had a set of parents that created this skin bag. But you know, if you're honest with yourself, that this body isn't all there is. There is some being inside here. That being is the one that watches us, right? In at work, at home, have these conversations. I know that sometimes you have this feeling of watching yourself do stuff, right? And that, we call it a ghost, a spirit, a soul. We call it a lot of things. But what we know is there is such a thing. There is such a thing, and you have one, I have that. And it came from somewhere, and it's going to go somewhere. Another interesting way to look at that is if somebody chopped off my arm and then chopped off my other arm, assuming I didn't bleed out, and then one leg and then the other leg, that'd be terrible and sad that it happens to anyone. But I still am me. There's still this thing in there that is me, that has nothing to do with the arms or the legs. And I don't know at what point, you know, the body stops being able to sustain itself as the house for the spirit. But I want to talk about the origin of that spirit for a moment. We know where our body came from. Well, those of you that have followed my story much know that I had the experience, unexpected, but the experience of dying in 2018, 5 years ago last month, June of 2018. And I had conversations with the being that I perceived to be God at the door between this life and the next. And one the details of those conversations I've talked about in many episodes on podcasts and so forth. And if you want to know about that, if that sort of thing interests you, I have a book that I wrote called Meeting God at the Door, Conversations, Choices, and Commitments of a Near-Death Experience. This is on Amazon. Go look at it. I'm not talking about that right now, other than that it happened. But since that's true, and we know our spirit came from somewhere else, our soul, if, as it were, then there's a origin story for that too. Now, this body, I was born in San Francisco, and I grew up in the East Bay and a very sort of middle-class-ish area. Nothing exciting. Never wanted for food. Didn't have luxuries. Just kind of average nothing is how it feels like to me now looking back. There are people who grow up physically in very challenging circumstances or in very privileged circumstances. But those are the physical circumstances. I want to get away from that for a minute. And I want to get right to this core thing, the spirit. So if your body has a pedigree, your parents, your grandparents, and so forth, the pedigree of your spirit, the genealogy, if you will, have you ever thought about that? What I know from my experience is that we are, you, me, each of us, we're creations of the divine. So that means the pedigree, the ancestry of your spirit and mine can be written on one line. Your parentage is God, the divine. And so the idea that we're children, that we're all children of this divine, is a true, real, visceral, very present concept. So we know that the DNA in our bodies determines our eye color and the hair. I mean, I used to have red hair. It was funny because when I spent time in the hospital this last weekend, one of the nurses that was there in my room and I was talking to when I was in the emergency room, she had very, very red hair. And we talked about red hair and how that comes and goes and so forth. And my genes, my DNA also determined that I have no hair. Well, I don't quite have no hair, but it's going away. So I used to have very red hair. Then it got blonde, and now it's white and disappearing. But that's all DNA. My DNA also decided that my eyes don't work very well. So I wear weird contact lenses that are really big, go clear out to the whites of the eye because of some condition in my eye. So that's all determined by the physical DNA. Your DNA may be make you very athletic. It may make you very large. It may make you small. It may make you heavy. It may make you light. Gives you your hair color and all the rest. I want to talk about the DNA of your spirit. So if you and I were children of the divine, then you have some heavy-duty DNA, spiritual DNA. And the idea that I want to explore with you today is that you have the DNA for greatness. You are literally a spirit, son, or daughter of the divine. Whoa! Right? Now, we know that you see this all the time in the acting world. You see names that you recognize from generation to generation. Oh, yeah, that was so-and-so's kid and so-and-so's kid, and they do the profession of their dad or mom, go into acting. You see that in musicians also, and there are others that come and go. So if we have, not if, since we have this DNA of our spirit, one generation removed from the divine, I have a question, and it's as much for me as for you, and that's this. Why do we settle for crumbs? Why do we settle for crumbs? That's an important question, and it's actually one that I discussed in that near-death experience I had in 2018. But today isn't about that. Today is just about your capability. If you knew right now for absolute certain that you had the DNA of the divine in you, in your spirit, and that's the thing that drives our behavior anyway. This body is just the house, right? Just the container. If you are aware of and present to the fact that you have infinite capability, what would you do differently? I want you to really think about that, because one of the things that's said in medicine, if you talk to doctors, who, especially doctors that work on, care for very ill patients, the largest determining factor for whether or not a patient recovers isn't the disease itself. It isn't the care. It isn't which hospital they're in. It's the attitude of the patient, how bad they want to recover. So the idea that he or she is a fighter, that matters. in recovery. I recently had an experience with a friend, someone who I know well and is a dear friend. And it's funny because we share duties at a conference, at MC duties. This conference started 10 years ago. In fact, this October is the 10th year it's been on. And it's grown to where there's now four ballrooms because the conference is so big. But back in the early days, I was the only MC. And when it got to be two and then three and four ballrooms, this fellow came on. But anyway, and so we get to talk a lot. And he's very active, and he's a good MC, and he does a great job, and he helps people get their YouTube channels up and running and so forth. But recently, a year, maybe a year and a half ago, he had a bout with cancer. That was his second bout. Second bout with cancer. I think second. At least second. He was very public about it in terms of what happened, what he was doing, the treatments, and he did all kinds of alternative treatments and so forth. But the key wasn't the weird treatments or this or that. It was his attitude. I will beat this. I'm doing this. We're going to do it. You know, he had a very supportive wife, and together they made a public, you know, show. And I don't mean show in a bad way, but a sharing, vulnerable sharing about this intensity of intention. Intensity of intention. And they did. Now, he, as far as I know, and I'll see him in October again, because that's when the 10th year of this conference is, and he'll be there as an MC again, so will I. But the intensity of intention changed the trajectory of his healing. Now, if the intensity of your intention changes the trajectory of healing so much so that nearly any doctor will tell you the biggest single factor is the patient's attitude. I saw this play out again with this individual who I know well. And one more time, the intensity of the intention, the determination to do whatever it took, won the day, trumped the disease. So that's true, and it's not just true for him. It's not just true for me. It's true for you. So I want to talk about DNA, the DNA of your success. What is that? In the body, we know it's that double helix, you know, that sort of twisted ladder, and it has those four things, A, C, T, G, I think, and they're probably wrong, but those four amino acids connected in infinite number of ways that express the number of genes. And I looked that up one day. I Googled how many possible DNA combinations are there, and the number's so big it's essentially infinite. I want you to think about your spiritual DNA, your potential DNA, your ability to create something. So your ability to be great at what you do isn't tied to that double helix of your body. Because there are people who have broken bodies who are great at what they do. There are people who have very healthy bodies who are great at what they do. There are people who are blind, who are deaf, who lack other things that, you know, one might associate with performance, who are great at what they do. There are people who have gone through all kinds of trial and hardship who are great at what they do. So what is the DNA of greatness? Well, let's talk about that. Number one, the DNA of greatness is the intensity of your intention. The intensity of your intention. So write that down, because it's so easy for us to have intentions that are essentially vaporware. Well, I wish this. I wanna that. I'm gonna. I'm gonna do this. One day I'm gonna get in shape. One day I'm gonna start a business. One day I'm gonna make a lot of money. But there's no intensity to that intention. It isn't a vibrant, powerful vision that calls forth extraordinary action. So part one of this DNA of greatness is the intensity of your intention. Part two you could think of as the consistency of your action. The intensity of your intention and the consistency of your action. And part three is never quitting, perseverance, moving through, no matter what, one foot in front of the other. There's a story that I hear about that, and that is you can get anywhere you want to go if you just put one foot in front of the other. Now, I want you to think about this. Maybe you're in Los Angeles right now, and you want to get to New York, 3,000 miles away. I have a client who walked, hear that right, who walked from Chicago to Los Angeles on Route 66 just to prove that he could do it. Now, that wasn't 3,000, it's 2,000 miles, but it's the same thing. If you are in Los Angeles and you get on the right road and you just keep putting one foot in front of the other, it'll take a while, but you'll get to New York and no one can stop you. Obviously, people can physically detain you and so forth. But that isn't the reason we don't get to our goals. The reason we don't get to our goals is because we don't take consistent action. We quit. We sit down. We give up. We tell stories. We make up things. And we don't persevere through hardships and struggles. And we don't persevere because we don't have a vibrant, intense dream. So I want to think about with you this ultimate life idea. Now, on the screen right now, you see www.ultimatelifechallenge.com. Now, we ran that a week ago, and we ran one in June, and we're going to run another one in August. And so go to that URL and look it up and see what that is, because this challenge is about helping you create that intensity of intention, the powerful vision and dream that will drive you no matter what. It's about creating consistent action, and it's about toughing it out, mental toughness. I have a friend who wrote a book called 52 Mental Toughness Mantras, Chris Doris. You should buy that book. He's been on this show some months ago, and I love him. I love his work. He's also a coach. Now, this Ultimate Life Challenge is about creating those things. And more than that, and here's what the deal is. We live right now in a world where it seems like the common doctrine is everything better be easy or something's not working right. If it's hard, something's wrong. Well, that's not true, and it's never been true. The idea, I mean, we do have Google. We can find out anything. We have the internet. Information is available. We now have, you know, the chat. GPT things and art sites that can create stuff instantaneously. We have instant availability of every piece of knowledge there ever was, practically. Okay, those large language models. I tell you a funny story. Joy, my wife, my angel, my beloved business partner and life partner, she's been doing this. I'll tell you what she's been doing. It's pretty funny. She's been creating recipes. Now, we all around here in the house know her as the pasta queen. She makes the best pasta sauces in the universe, period. And so in her experimentation, now twice I know, and maybe more, she's done a fun thing. She'll list a set of ingredients in chat, you know, one of the AI formats. I have this and this and this and this. I want a pasta sauce. Give me a recipe for a pasta sauce. And now at least two times and maybe more, it has spit out a beautiful recipe using exactly what she has. That's fun. It's also funny, but it's indicative of the level of access that you have and that I have right this minute here now to know anything there is to know. So lack of knowledge, I don't know how, it's just not true anymore. You can know how to do anything, but knowing how doesn't solve an intensity of intention, consistent action, and persevering through hardships. It doesn't solve that. Now, we've also been sort of indoctrinated, as it were, with television and movies that every problem, life-threatening problems, overthrow the kingdom problems, spy situations, nuclear holocaust problems, they all are solvable in 500 pages of a mystery novel, in 2 hours of a movie, or in 30 minutes of a TV sitcom. If things aren't download and double click, something's wrong. Well, you know what? That's not true. It never will be, and it never was. Greatness takes effort. Trees grow slowly, one ring at a time. I have the story that I tell about an orange tree that we planted in Phoenix. And it grew, and we watered it and took care of it and everything. And the first year, of course, it didn't produce any fruit. Now, we knew that. We knew that citrus trees don't produce fruit the first year. But if I hadn't known that, I'd been nurturing this tree for an entire year, I could have been mad. I could have ripped it out by the roots and said, stupid tree. But I waited another year, and there it was, great fruit, succulent oranges, and we got those every year after that. So the truth is, in nature, in the world, in the arena of greatness, all three of those things are required. And I said intensity of intention. You can call that your vision. You can call it whatever you want, but it is the driving fire that makes you want something. Okay. And the second thing is a choice to take consistent action. One of the most prevalent excuses I hear from people who want coaching, who want an outcome, they want to make more money, they want to sign more coaching clients, they want to do that stuff, is a lack of willingness to take consistent action. Well, I knew what I should have done, but I just didn't do it. I was tired. I didn't feel like it. I got distracted, et cetera, et cetera. And so they launch off on a road of procrastination and self-sabotage. And so the consistent action isn't there. Or family members will bash them. Friends will say, what are you thinking? You can't do that. And they buy into that. And all those spirals lead to the same place, which is nowhere. All those spirals lead to the death of your dream. So that's one piece of this DNA of greatness. Now, another whole topic of this, because that attitude, that's the attitude, really intense intention that never dies, consistent action and a willingness to persevere through obstacles, no matter how grumpy they are. One foot in front of the other from LA to New York, just keep walking. Just keep walking. All right, those things are necessary. But I want to dive into even deeper into what is it that helps you and me create this intense vision? Like, where does an intense vision come from? Well, I'll tell you. And I'm not going to pretend this is the only place that an intense vision can come from, but I can tell you that it works every time. It is guaranteed to produce for you, if you do the work, an intense vision of a possibility, something you could do and you could create. Now, this is about creating your own voice, your unique, sometimes in the personal development thing, we call it a superpower. And that's a cliche word. But what it really is trying to say is there is something that you right here, right now have that nobody else has, something that you are different, better, and more attractive to a certain group than any other person in the world. Okay, now we see that all the time. Two people will have a conversation and they don't hit it off. Someone else comes into the conversation and something clicks. Like, people get along with some people and they don't others. So I have superpowers, so do you. My superpower is going to be completely uninteresting and useless to one group of people and very persuasive and powerful to another. So is it with you. So if you want to figure out with me right here, right now, how to find your superpower, I'm using that cliche word, your unique voice, your message, your offering to the world, then let's dive into that. Because here's what usually happens. You and I, we got to make a living. We got to eat. We got to pay rent or buy a house if we buy and, you know, take vacations and care for those around us and, you know, just get through life. Like this business that I just have, you know, we've got to buy some crutches and some other things. And in Canada, fortunately, the medical is handled so that that whole day in the ER didn't cost me anything. And I'm really grateful for that because the care I got was really good. I was happy. Yeah, I had to wait a while in the ER, but it was great care and great follow-up care, and seeing the doctors is going to be handled, and I love all that part. So you have a message and a voice, if you want it. Now, you and I were free to just go through life without too much, with no ripples, just getting by with what's easy and obvious. But most of us feel a yearning to do more, to be more. And I'm not talking about the yearning fueled by lifestyles of the rich and famous. That's hollow and empty, I can tell you. I know that for sure because I've been there. There were several years when I made enough money that I could buy anything I wanted, and none of that turned out well. So I'm not talking about that yearning. I'm talking about that deep spiritual, if it will, the yearning that comes from that spirit inside of us that says, I like helping people. I like doing good. I like being of value. I like doing something that matters. Well, all of us, me, you, everybody, we all get a job and do something useful and we get paid and we pay rent and buy things and go on vacation. So why isn't that enough? I'll tell you why right here, right now. Right this minute, as you and I talk, you have a set of existing skills. I don't know what yours are. I'll tell you what some of mine are. I know how to use recording gear in the studio. I've run a recording studio for 40 years, so I know which microphones to pick for drums or guitar or vocals, and I know how to set them up in the right distance, and I know how to record on the old tape format and digitally, and I know how to do all that. So that's a skill I have. Maybe you have a skill. Maybe you're an attorney. Maybe you're an accountant. Maybe you're an architect. Maybe you deliver pizza and you're the best pizza delivery person that ever breathed there. Maybe you're an esthetician. Maybe you do the most incredible nails that there ever were. My wife loves to go get her nails done. And there was a time when we first moved up here a few years ago where she went and did it regularly. And I was amazed at the number of creative and innovative designs that came back. They were really interesting. There's another lady that we know that does fabulous with her hair. Now, my wife loves interesting hair colors. When the terrible conflict in Ukraine started, she had blue and yellow hair, and sometimes it's red and purple and just all kinds of interesting fun stuff. So that is a skill that this woman has, who she sees, to do her hair. And this woman has won contests in Canada, and so it's like a real skill. So you have a set of skills that you've developed. I know you do because you've been paid. Anything that you get paid to do is a skill. Maybe you grade papers. I did that when I went to college. Maybe you're a great landscaper, and that's a skill you've developed. So you have a set of skills that you've developed, and those are the things that we sell in the marketplace to get paid. But you know what? Surveys that I read tell me that at least 75% or more of people don't like their jobs. In other words, they've learned a skill. They're selling it in the marketplace. They're getting a paycheck. They're paying bills, but they're not happy. They're successful, but not satisfied. Why not? Well, there's a real clear reason. Sometimes we act like this is mysterious. It's not. The yearnings of your soul come from the gifts and mission that you have as a soul. Like, we learned a skill here in this world, whether it's taking care of lawns or handling books or being an attorney, we learned that set of skills, and that's fine. But a deeper, more profound piece of this puzzle is your natural gift. Now, one of the things I learned when I had that near-death experience was that not only is it true that each one of us is a divine creation, that truth that your genealogy of the genealogy of your spirit is one line, you know, God, the divine, and then you, God, the divine, and everybody. So there's just one generation there. That's true. Something else I learned in that conversation is that you and I were given gifts, talents, abilities, natural gifts when we came here. Maybe we developed them wherever we were before, or maybe they were bequeathed. I'm not going to worry about that, but you have them. And do you know that? Because there are just things that you're naturally good at. Now, some of that stuff is kind of obvious. Some people seem gifted in music or art. Some people seem really gifted at less visible things, like really good at listening. Some people are really good at empathy. They just seem to create a space of safety where people want to talk and they feel safe around those people. Some people know how to read between the lines, and they're really discerning, and they're very intuitive about that stuff. And they can see things that others don't see. One of the natural and fabulous gifts that my wife, my angel wife, has is she always has a sense of what people need, and she's looking out for it. It's automatic for her. And I'm amazed. Every time I see it, she perceives things, not with the five senses, but with some other spiritual antenna that I don't seem to have. And she knows and understands what people are thinking and feeling and what we need to do about this, that, and the other. So those are beautiful gifts. And you know what? They're actually more important than that set of skills you learned. So when I went to college, one of the things I did was grade papers for calculus and then grade papers for differential equations, which is like, you know, I had a math scholarship, so I took some complicated stuff. But I graded papers and I learned how to do that. And I got paid to do it. I also got paid to be a tutor for some other math classes. And that was a skill that I learned, but it wasn't one that I wanted to continue to use. That would have been something that would have been very unsatisfying in the long term. If you're looking for ways to both make a bigger contribution and feel content, it is to explore the gift, the skills you already have, like what you're selling in the marketplace, but more importantly, explore and find the natural gifts that you have. Those things that you do well without trying very hard, that seem to come easy for you. Maybe it's an eye for design. Maybe it's listening. Maybe it's intelligence. Maybe it's your ability to study and assimilate a lot of knowledge really quickly. I have a client that's like that. His ability to research, assimilate things, and then deploy them is remarkable. Remarkable. And he does it fast and he does it well. So those are natural gifts. And you have some. I promise. You probably have many. Now, it makes complete sense if you think, now I've learned this set of skills and I've sold those in the marketplace and I get paid. It makes perfect sense to realize that if I augment those skills with my natural gifts, that I'll be more valuable in the marketplace. Because now there are two things, at least, at play. There's the skills that I've learned, and there's the natural gifts I have. Now, what that does is it leverages your value. This is something that happened to me in a job that I had. I got hired to do a job, and the job was kind of squishy, and it was a startup organization, and it was very complicated and very technical, and the startup period lasted for a couple of years. High pressure, pretty intense, a lot of money at stake, etc. And a natural gift that I have still, is I have the ability to make people feel confident, to listen to them, to acknowledge and to exchange ideas in a way that makes them feel heard and confident. Well, when I combine that natural gift with the skill that I had, suddenly I was elevated. I got promotions. I got money I wasn't expecting. I got offers that I wasn't expecting, and it rapidly gave me the ability to create more value, and that money follows value, so get paid more. Now, I didn't do it on purpose. I wasn't aware at that time of the things that I'm sharing with you today. I did it accidentally, okay? And as fortune would have it, or experience, I was able to combine those things and my, you know, the jobs that I held and the opportunities that I got moved up very quickly. Okay. Now, but you know what? Now we've talked about two different things. And that is in the context of the DNA of greatness. And that's like this helix. I'm going to give you a third one. There is actually three strands in this DNA of greatness. Now, the DNA of our bodies only has two strands. It's that double helix, right? This is a triple helix. You have your existing skills that we talked about. You have your natural gifts. And the third piece of your triple helix that augments your existing skills and natural gifts even further is the thread or the piece of your DNA of greatness of your life experience. Now, what does that mean? Well, if someone goes through life and everything is easy, handed to them on a silver platter, they don't have to struggle or try hard for anything, they don't develop much resilience. They don't develop the ability to overcome adversity, which was that third thing we talked about, the intensity of your vision and the consistency of your action, your ability to overcome obstacles. You don't develop that if life is easy for you. And in fact, people whose life is easy consistently, when adversity comes, often just crumble. Now, they might develop the ability to overcome adversity suddenly, but often it just crumbles, fall apart, and then they start raging at the heavens or the universe, why me, why this, why now, not fair, blah, 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 and shouting at the skies. Your life experience is the most valuable item in your triple helix, and I'll tell you why. We all know the saying that, you know, academics, they know something, but if they haven't had any experience in the field building whatever they know or experimenting with whatever they know, it's book learning. And that sort of stuff is legendary. People that have book learning, but they don't have any hardcore experience in the field or in real life, their book learning isn't worth much. Now, I've seen that repeated over and over again. It's fabled and legendary with engineers and construction. So my son owns a construction company, and he builds things, and it's not small things. One of the things he builds is free-range chicken barns, okay? And that's a very specific, complicated thing that has to be built a certain way to some very exacting standards. Well, I hear from him all the time about the engineering design and then the real-world application. They never match. They're never the same, and you always have to make accommodations and adjustments for real life. Think of it this way. You can plan your day and your week and your month and even your life, but let's just bring it back to a week. You could plan your week very carefully, very efficiently, and very powerfully. And then you get into the week, and I can tell you, before lunch on Monday, your schedule is derailed, and you can either get mad and frustrated and trash the week, or you can make those adjustments to real life, maintain control, and keep your power moving anyway. That's the life experience part. Now, the pieces of life experience that seem to make the most difference for most people are the hardships. The things that went well and came easy don't seem to have the big impression. The illnesses, the accidents, the divorces, the business partner that stabbed you in the back, the bankruptcy, the flood, the tornado, the your parents got divorced, somebody you love died, someone you knew, God forbid, committed suicide. Those kinds of events shape us, and they shape us powerfully. They cause us to ask deep, profound, sometimes scary questions about why, about what to do now, about how to get over the grief and loss of a particular thing. And sometimes those events ruin us. And sometimes those events refine us. And sometimes they do both. My own personal experience included a lot of discipline as a youngster that was abusive. Today it would be felony child abuse. For many years, I allowed that set of experiences to ruin me. I struggled with depression, with valuing myself. I did a lot of self-sabotage and things that were damaging because I allowed those experiences to ruin me. Further development in my life allowed me to change the way I saw those, and now they refine me. So an event doesn't necessarily ruin you or refine you. It can do both. I want you to think right now as you listen to this of some powerful events all through your life that have changed things. after that day, you saw stuff different. Stuff felt different. You interpreted things differently. Those are important days. Those are your life experience. Now, I used as a background today this martial arts studio for a reason. I've spent thousands of hours in such studios over the years and have earned some black belt, second degree black belt, instructor certification, that sort of thing. And I've spent a lot of effort and time in those places. The work that was done there changed me profoundly, not just physically, but more important, spiritually, understanding what was possible, understanding that impossible is just an idea, and it's only true as long as it's true, and then it's not true anymore. I learned that I could do things I didn't believe I could do. So today we're talking about the DNA of greatness. The DNA of greatness. We talked about three setup things. The intensity of your vision. The intensity of your vision, your willingness to take consistent action and persevering through hardships. Then we dug in deeper to that vision piece. Where do you create? How do you create a vision? I have people tell me so often, I don't know, I don't have any clarity. That's the favorite cliche word. I don't have enough clarity. If I knew exactly what I was supposed to do, that's nonsense. You're never going to know exactly what to do if what you mean is, I want to guarantee that if I do this, I'll get a perfect outcome. Often, I have clients that have said this, I don't have clarity. And what they really mean is, I want a step-by-step formula, whether I buy a program online or use a coach or read a book or whatever, that's guaranteed so that if I follow this formula step by step, the outcome will be perfect. I won't get my face smashed in or my ego jumped up and down on. I'm guaranteed that it'll go where I want it to go, maybe with some minor things. But pretty much that's what people mean when they say, I don't have clarity. Well, I can tell you in the martial arts fights and demonstrations and, you know, breaking things and all the stuff that goes on at the advanced levels in those, in that kind of competition, there's no such thing. You have to make it up as you go. And in order to make it up as you go, you have to have a vision, an endpoint, a powerful thought that drives you forward to take that consistent action no matter what, to get up when you fall, and to power through obstacles. So the thing about the triple strand is about creating that vision, the intensity of your imagination, that in that vision that draws you forward to take consistent action and power through obstacles. And we determined that that comes from three things. I called it a triple strand helix, and I want you to listen, not because I'm saying this, but I want you to think about it for you. Because I found mine. It drives my life. It drives me every day. I'm happy. I love my life and everything is beautiful. But it's come through a lot of hardships. So this is for you. I want you to take stock of your existing skills, those things that you've been paid for, that strand of your DNA of greatness. Then I want you to take some time, real time, inquiry. Maybe you need to talk to those that know you. Maybe you need to look deeply in your own life, but to research that second strand of DNA and understand what are your natural gifts. And don't be satisfied with, well, I'm pretty good at art, or I think I listen well. People come to me with their problems. That's superficial. Dig in and understand not only what it is, but what it means. And think about, how could I augment, grow, make more powerful the existing skills that I have with these natural gifts? That combination isn't always obvious, and sometimes it takes a good bit of work to weave them together in a powerful way. And the third thing I want you to do badly for your sake is look at your life experience, that third strand of your DNA, and do the following. Identify 20 pivotal events in your life, things that you immediately remember that changed you in some way. write them down. In a column right next to it, write down how you felt, what you thought at the time. In the third column, write down how you view that pivotal event now. Has it changed? Have you gotten more wisdom, more insight? Like me, for example, when I had those negative things happen to me as a kid, I grew up with depression and hating myself. More things have happened, and now I have a completely different view. That change from what I felt then to how I see it now, how I understand it now, there's the power. There's the engine. Your ability to change and become refined instead of ruined through those events is the energy for your engine. Then going to work on weaving those three things together, your existing skills, your natural gifts, and the effects, the learnings, the powerful changes from your life experience. Those things will give you access to your unique voice. Why does that matter? Well, that unique voice, I'm calling it a voice, you can call it a superpower, you can call it whatever you want, I can tell you absolutely for certain will allow you to make the biggest difference in the world. It'll allow you to do things where you can be great, better than anyone else. That DNA of greatness is woven from those three things. It will allow you to be great. You can have the biggest influence and impact combining those things. It will allow you to have the most fun, the most enjoyable career, meaning value, add the most value to the world. And because it's the most fun, the most impactful, it will also allow you to make the most money. So I don't care what you've been paid, just selling your existing skills. If you choose to do the work that we've talked about today, and create that triple strand of DNA that's part of the DNA of your greatness, you'll be able to make more money, have more fun, and make a bigger difference. And most of all, you will satisfy that longing, that feeling in your soul that we all have when we are not living to our full potential. That feeling that says, I could do more. I should be doing more. I don't feel like I'm really doing what I came to do, the thing I'm called, pushed, driven to do. It will satisfy that. I can promise you that. As you make that discovery, as you lean into that, you'll be happy. You'll be wealthy. You'll have fun. I offer you the opportunity to go to the Ultimate Life Challenge and check out a place where I can help you if you'd like that. But whether you have my help or not, listen to these things and take the time to do the inquiry in your own heart so you can move forward and create your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA.